Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, what a Monday Night Raw we had, you know. Folks, Paul Heyman has been contributing to the writing starting last week, and some of it trickled over, as you can probably plainly tell, this week. And I'm starting to see some of the fruits of that labor. So let's just start with the opening. Kurt Angle is already in the ring when Raw starts, and Kurt Angle says, as promised, on the pay-per-view, on Extreme Rules, if Brock Lesnar was not physically there at Monday Night Raw, or at very least sending in a confirmation of a fact that he will defend the belt, then he was going to be stripped of the belt. Kurt Angle said, it's been 24 hours. I've heard absolutely nothing from Brock Lesnar. Therefore, I have no choice. I am going to strip Brock Lesnar of the Universal Championship. That brings out Paul Heyman. And without going into too much of what was said, the gist of it is Paul Heyman tried to wiggle out of it and say he wants to bring the Universal title into the UFC cage and promote wrestling along with MMA. Kurt Angle wasn't buying it and said, look, he either defended the belt at SummerSlam or it's being stripped tonight. Paul Heyman, with no other choice, says, fine, you back me into a corner. He will defend the belt at SummerSlam. Now the only question is who? Who is it that you're going to choose? Well, that opens up the floodgates. The first guy out is Bobby Lashley, who apparently has returned to glad-handing and smiling and whatever now that he's won an important first match. And he comes out and basically says, well, I beat Roman Reigns, so therefore I should be the guy. Now, much to my surprise, the second guy out is Drew McIntyre. He has an interesting point, saying, look, I didn't come here to be in Dolph Ziggler's corner. This is phase two of our plan, and that is that I want to face Brock Lesnar, become the Universal Champion. That actually got a pop. He got a bigger pop than Lashley, so you know Lashley's not over. He's just not over. Seth Rollins comes out. Elias comes out. Finn Balor comes out. And finally, Roman Reigns comes out. And all of them have various reasons why they want to be the one to face Brock Lesnar. So Kurt Angle comes up with the theory that we will have two three-way dances on tonight's show, and the winners of both of those three-way dances will face each other next week, and the winner of that will face Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Now, that in and of itself is not a bad opening. The problem is the booking, because no one in the world thought any different than it would be Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley. No one in the world. There was actually no point to watching it because you already knew. Given the way it was, it would have been great if it was Bobby Lashley, Roman Reigns, and maybe Finn Balor. And you say, wow, it's going to be Lashley or Reigns. But it ain't going to be both because they're in the same match. No, of course not. They were put in separate matches because you knew it was going to be Bobby Lashley versus Roman Reigns again. So that booking was not very good. And then if you're an even more intelligent wrestling fan, you say, well, look, we've got Finn Balor We've got Roman Reigns, and we've got Drew McIntyre. It's far too early to have McIntyre pinned, so he won't be pinned. Roman Reigns sure as hell isn't going to get pinned, so guess who is? Finn Balor. I mean, you can't make that any more obvious. You don't even need to be a really, really smart wrestling fan to have figured that out. I mean, that's the problem with the WWE sometimes. And a little later in the show, they prove they don't have to do that. But they choose to sometimes. So that's the first match we get. I don't have a problem with the match. The match itself, as far as the execution, as far as the guy's athletic ability, Drew McIntyre did an over-the-top rope dive. Amazing. I don't have any problem with the match. My problem is it's anticlimactic because there's no wrestling fan above the age of 7 that did not know that Roman Reigns was, not only did not know Roman Reigns was winning the match, but also knew who was losing. Who was going to take the pinfall? And when it gets to that point, Mike, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah, it does become a problem. And before this match, look, for a long time, even though they didn't want to use this, you know, Finn Balor had a point. He never lost a match. He never lost the title, you know. You know, he had it in him, but nobody beat him for the title. So if they were smart about it, they would have worked it in a way that neither did Finn Balor did get pinned, you know, if you get what I'm saying. Therefore, he could keep saying, well, I never lost.
Yeah, but you know what, Mike? I somewhat have to disagree with that, and here's why. Finn Balor is supposed to be a face. He's supposed to be a good guy. He's been whining for 2 years. I never lost the belt. You never defended it either. You had it for one day. You had it for one day. And you got hurt. And now you're still whining. I never really lost it. Well, yeah, you did. Because you got hurt. And you couldn't defend it. So, you know, that's something a heel does. I'm really the champion. After 2 years, he's still running around saying, I'm really the champion. No, you're not. Instead of saying, look, I had a string of bad luck. The day I won the belt, I got injured. But I know what it's like to be a champion now, and I know what it felt like to have that around my waist for a day, and I want that feeling back. Instead of saying, I'm kind of still the champion. No, you're not, Finn. You've been whining about it for 2 years. You won something 2 years ago, and you're still talking about it when you didn't defend it one time? Didn't even get a chance to defend it. So I don't like that with Finn Balor because I think that it just makes him look like a whiny little bitch who can't get over the fact that he got hurt in the match he won the belt on, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right. Finn Balor is whining like a little girl and like, come on now. You had the belt for one day and you got injured? Come on now.
The best thing to do for Finn Balor is to simply say, you know, when you have a taste of being the champion, it sticks with you. And I realize, you know, what happened to me. I realize the situation, but at the same token, I want that taste back. Instead of still kind of indicating, well, I'm technically still the champion. No, you're not. That's like Curtis Axel saying, I'm technically still in the Royal Rumble. From 3 years ago. So I didn't like that. I didn't like it at all, but I did like the match. I just think that at the end of the day, it's real predictable. I mean, really, really predictable. And so it's anticlimactic. It's not that fans don't want to see it, but they're like, well, we know what's going to happen. And you damn sure know that if Roman Reigns does win, which he did in the opening match, then you know for sure Bobby Lashley's winning. Now, some fans would say, well, I kind of thought Seth Rollins might, so they could do the, you know, Roman Reigns against Seth Rollins, you know, the brothers in the Shield got to fight each other, and maybe Roman is bitter if he doesn't win, and this could lead to, you know, well, that's too logical. That's too good of a story. The WWE don't write good stories. The WWE writes easy stories. So let's first get that clear. The WWE spends no time saying what would be the most dramatic and effective story. They just say what would be the easiest. And the easiest is Lashley wins and they have a rematch. A rematch from a match that no one wanted to see and no one liked. So that's what we get there. Then we have a very odd thing happen. I thought it was odd. It's hard to really describe this, but basically the WWE, I guess, have thrown the whole Sasha Bailey thing out the window. Because for months, literally months, we have had that feud building, Sasha Banks versus Bailey. And the story was supposed to be this. Bailey, who's a really nice girl and maybe a little naive, and Sasha, who's a little more streetwise and focused on herself, are the best of friends. But Sasha puts herself above all, and Bailey puts herself second a lot. And Bailey couldn't cope with the fact that when Sasha puts herself above Bailey, Bailey don't do the same for Sasha. So Bailey got mad at Sasha, and Sasha got mad at Bailey for not understanding that that's her attitude and that's the way she's always been. And the two had tension right up until the point where Bailey finally snapped her "I'm a good, you know, girl" image and beat the hell out of Sasha Banks and said, "I've had enough of you stabbing me in the back." While this could have led to a great storyline about, Kurt Angle saying, "Look, if you girls want to fight it out, we settle things in the ring here." No, instead it's, "No, you must be friends." Okay, well, first off, that doesn't make any sense. Why must you be friends? People turn on each other all the time. Did you send Big Cass and Enzo to anger management and say you must be friends? Did you send Chris Jericho and KO to anger management and say, no, you must be friends? Why must they be friends? Why can't they be enemies? And you capitalize on it and have a good match. So that premise makes no sense from Jump Street. But he sends them to anger management and they decide, instead of making a serious approach on two girls who used to like each other but now despise each other and their jealousies and insecurities are coming out, they turn it into a comedy act. They turn that into a comedy act. So think about this for a minute. Bailey and Sasha become enemies, and Kurt Angle says, "We cannot have you as enemies." Because why? Why can't you have them as enemies? Once again, did you send Chris Jericho and KO to anger management? Did you send Enzo and Cass to anger management when they turned on each other? No, you let them fight. How come you're not letting these girls fight? And then you turn it into a comedy act with Dr. Shelby and his, "Oi, what am I going to do? These girls are crazy. I don't know," you know, Jerry Lewis. It's a Jerry Lewis routine. So you've already ruined that. Totally ruined that. So now that you've ruined everything, and it's a whole great big shithole of a mess, you finally did something that actually elicited a little bit of a reaction from me. When Sasha Banks finally snapped after the tag team match that they had, which was just a disaster, by the way. It's a tag team match, and as far as I know, Sasha Banks can help her partner. They didn't, I don't know. The whole thing was a mess. Sasha does a really good job of saying, "Fine, I'm done with this nonsense. I'm completely done with it. You know why I like you. You know that I admire you. You know this, that, and the other thing. Is that what you want me to say? You know I have a hard time with my feelings, but if that's what you want me to say, then that's what I'm going to say. Of course I love you. I've always loved you, and I always will." That's a great moment. Here's the problem with that great moment. That's a great moment that should have happened after their match. Because now I don't know why you'd have a match. And maybe they're not gonna. Maybe they're gonna send one to SmackDown. But this goes to show you how convoluted the writing is. It's all over the place. Rather than to stay centrally focused on Kurt Angle saying, "Hey, these two girls are gonna tear each other apart, and you know, now that they hate each other, let's put them in a match and get the match out of it," where both girls try to tear each other apart, and that finally leads to that moment where it looks like now they've been driven a wedge that no one is ever going to be able to put back together. They fought each other. They had an epic battle. The WWE Universe got a great match. Whoever wins, wins. And then they have that moment. Then it means something. To me, I'm watching the moment saying, this is very well done. And I'm emotionally invested in this. And Sasha did an awesome job of sounding convincing. But it's out of place. It's in the wrong spot in this story. That's the problem. Mike, I liked the moment. I just didn't like where the moment was placed.
Right. This, the way they've written this is the is you remember those old choose your own adventure books you used to get to, at your local library or whatever, where you could turn to page 60 and see what happens and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's what this sounds like. This is like, okay, we're gonna put this here. What do you want to happen? Turn to page 75, and this is going to happen. But it's in the wrong, like you said, it's in the wrong place. Now, the only way, in my mind, almost the only way to save this thing is to send one of them to SmackDown. I mean, much like they did, what was it, with Kevin Owens and somebody? They sent them, was it Kevin Owens and
Sami Zayn
or Kevin Owens?
Yeah.
Yeah, they sent one of them. When I'm on the SmackDown. Now, they ended up back together anyway, but they sent when I'm on the SmackDown. Now, who? Now the big question is, which one are they going to send if they do send?
I don't even know if they are, Mike. They're still saying there may be a SummerSlam match. If there is, then what is this for? At this point, now, if they fight, Sasha's not going to be convincing if she says, I was lying to you when I said that, because she didn't sound like she was lying. And Bailey's going to be a heel if she attacks Sasha after Sasha says that. So there's really, this came out of place. This is what happens after the match if you don't want either one of them to be a heel. This is what happens after the match. Sasha comes out and is her normal Sasha, which means she'll cheat if she has to. Whatever she has to do to win. Her and Bailey have the huge fight that everybody wants to see. And then after SummerSlam, if that's where you want to have it, on Monday Night Raw the next night, she has this tearful come-to-God moment where she says, look, I never hated you. I've always loved you. You know that. I just have a problem saying it. So I'm saying it now. Is that what you want? And then moves on to SmackDown or whatever. And it's like, okay, that's fine. They're friends. The story's over. Roll the credits. Okay, that's kind of what is supposed to happen. Now I don't even know where the story is. Is it the end? Is this the beginning? Is this the middle? I don't know. All I know is it was a well-written spot. So I smell Paul Heyman. It's a well-written spot that's in the wrong spot. That's the problem. So then Dolph Ziggler comes out. And Dolph Ziggler rightfully says exactly what I said on this show yesterday when he says, when is the last time you saw an intercontinental title match be the main event of a WWE pay-per-view? Now, I didn't know the answer. Apparently, he did. The answer was 17 years ago. It's a long time. And then, of course, he flips it on its head and says, if you think that's because of Seth Rollins, you're crazy. It's because of me. And we have Bobby Roode come out to confront him. Now, this is where I'm going to give the WWE a lot of credit. When Bobby Roode comes out, who is, he's not over. I warned everybody, Bobby Roode's not going to be over up here. He comes out, he confronts, they have a nice little exchange too, where Dolph Ziggler says to him, yeah, well, let me ask you a question. How did it feel watching me defend my belt in an Iron Man match while you're sitting on the sidelines? You're not even in the pay-per-view. And Bobby Roode says, hey, that didn't feel good. And that's why I'm out here to challenge you. Well, I say to myself, are we going to have an intercontinental title defense? If we are, Bobby Roode's not winning. But then Dolph Ziggler says, I never said it was a title defense. I said you can have a match. I didn't say you could have a title match. So it's a non-title match. So right away my brain says, okay, Bobby Roode is winning. And then they're going to have the title match at probably SummerSlam. And to their credit, Dolph Ziggler wins, and he wins on his own. without Drew McIntyre, and that is the correct move. That is the perfect move. Total thumbs up on that, because you've done a few things. Did it help Bobby Roode? No. But Bobby Roode may be beyond help. He's going to have to turn heel, which he should have been anyway. But it shows that Dolph Ziggler can do things on his own if he needs to, and as a qualified champion if he really wants to be. And that's important. And it shows that the WWE isn't always going to follow that same formula of, oh, non-title, the champion loses. No, he didn't lose, did he? Now, in the chat room, Maniac saying it was SummerSlam when the British Bulldog challenged Bret Hart at Wembley Stadium. Yeah, that's when that was 17 years ago. That's the last time that that was the actual feature match. And the only reason it was a feature match then is because they were at Wembley Stadium, where the Bulldog was a big deal. So to be honest with you, that doesn't even count as much as this counted. So the WWE's making a couple of right moves. This one, Mike, I thought was the best move of the night on Raw.
Yeah, I thought so too. And look, we talk about how the Miz kind of brought some prestige back to the Intercontinental title. If they handle this Dolph Ziggler thing right, Dolph Ziggler can do the same thing that the Miz did. He's got the talent. He's got the mic chops. He's got everything you need to do that with him. And, you know, this would be a perfect way to make him happy and use the guy and use him correctly.
And he already is, to a certain extent. He already is. I just think the WWE made a perfect move with letting Ziggler go over on Bobby Roode in a non-title match, even, because it makes Ziggler look all that much more tough to beat, Todd, and makes him look like a worthy champion.
You're absolutely right there. They did the right move there with Dolph Ziggler winning the match in that non-title, Intercontinental non-title match.
And they shocked the hell out of me. They shocked the hell out of me, because I thought, well, here's the typical pattern. Non-title match. Roode wins. Then he says, well, because you won, you get a title shot at WrestleMania. That's what I thought was going to happen. So hats off to the WWE for that one. That was the best move of the night. We then get Tyler Breeze, who's going to do a solo thing while Fandango's recovering from shoulder surgery. And he's against Mojo Rawley. And I'm not going to lie to you. I hated Mojo Rawley in the Hype Bros. I thought it was stupid. I thought it was overblown. I thought it was dull, but this Mojo Rawley, I love. He's like an old school heel. He looks dead serious. When he comes down to that ring, he looks like a guy who's like focused on kicking your ass. And last night, I thought he was better than ever. He's getting better every week, because not only did he come down laser focused, laser beam eyes, I'm going to destroy this guy. But he's giving him the trash talking while he's in the ring, saying, why don't you just tap out already? And lights out when he hit him with that big running elbow. And I'm saying to myself, you might have something with this guy. Now that you've unleashed whatever the hell you unleashed in him as far as his inner heel, he's running with this. And he's not the most talented wrestler, but he doesn't have to be as a heel. He can just come off as a powerhouse brawler, and that's fine. He don't have to be Chris Benoit. He does not have to be Dean Malenko. He just has to be Mojo Rawley. He just has to be a raw brawler and a powerhouse and a guy who's really tough to beat. And he's coming across that way. And he laid waste to Tyler Breeze. So they know it too. And that's another good move. So there's two good moves in a row by WWE last night, Mike.
I mean, it's like you said earlier, kind of makes you wonder who's writing this stuff. You know, who's writing this? You think about it. If Paul Heyman continues to do writing and does more writing, there's going to be a definite demarcation before Paul and after Paul. as to how good this stuff could get, you know. And now my question is, could he be, if his charge goes away, if his co-client goes away and doesn't come back, could we be seeing him writing for both shows?
I don't know. All I know is those Ziggler's interview and his match with Bobby Roode, Mojo Rawley and his match with Tyler Breeze, and not so much Sasha Banks and Bayley's match, which was a disaster, but the spot that was written after it, even though it was out of place in the story, was really well done, really well written. So those three elements of Raw, I'm pretty good with. So we get the B team, and they fight the Ascension, and what is there to say? You know, it's an okay match. The Ascension got in a lot of offense, which is good because, you know, they've been underused. But no one cares. And then the Deleters of World appear and they say, you know, we're going to take back the belts. And everybody's like, nobody cares. Right now, the tag team division's in horrible shape and nobody cares. In the meantime, we get Baron Corbin. I'm not even going to talk about that match because it actually brought me down. And I was on a high. I was rolling well. Baron Corbin backstage says, hey, how dare you make 2 3-way dances without consulting me and Stephanie? And Kurt says, I don't think I had to consult Stephanie. And he says, well, if that's not bad enough, how come I'm not in one? You think Finn Balor deserves one more than me? And he says, well, you know, yeah, you lost to Finn Balor last night. Kurt, need I remind you that Roman Reigns lost to Bobby Lashley last night? And he's in it. Who writes this stuff? It's okay to say, no, I don't think you deserve it. It's not okay to give that reason because somebody you did put in the match did the exact same thing. So that's kind of stupid. We then get the debut of the Authors of Pain. Every so often they re-debut them because they know they've been blowing their entire whatever, and they come out and basically destroy Titus Worldwide. Just basically destroy them. As much as I like Titus Worldwide, and I do, this had to happen. If you're going to have these Authors of Pain be big time, they got to destroy some people. They can't have a hard time getting by a fun team, but a team that really isn't going anywhere, and we know it. So I don't have a problem with them destroying Titus Worldwide, Mike, only because, you know, it has to be if you're ever going to have some heel tag teams that appear to have momentum.
Yeah, the only problem I had with this particular part was Dana Brooke. Where is she?
No, she was in the other match, so I guess they figure she can't come out.
Well, I mean, why not?
I know, why not? I don't know. I don't know, and I think the WWE just doesn't care, because when Dana Brooke does come out to wrestle, she wears her old outfit, which is more like rock and roll and dominatrix instead of that secretarial thing. I think she should come out looking like she comes out when she's walking down the ring with Titus Worldwide. That's her new gimmick, no? Speaking of new gimmicks, Sarah Logan is apparently no longer a country girl. That's interesting. She went from a country girl to a Celtic Viking. She's now a Celtic Viking. I don't know why. I guess she was on Ancestry.com and found out she's ancestors of a Celtic Viking, so now she's wearing some Celtic Viking makeup around her eyes. I didn't know Celtic Vikings had makeup, but okay. And she's no longer the down-home country girl, redneck, kick your ass on down on the farm girl. She is a Celtic Viking. Do I like it? No. However, we should all pat ourselves on the back here, because when we said on this show that out of those three girls, Sarah Logan is probably the one with the highest potential, even though Ruby Riott's great, quite frankly, the majority of people who listen to this show and write me laughed at me and said, what are you crazy? She's not going anywhere. She's third banana. Ruby Riott's the best wrestler. Liv Morgan's the hottest. Sarah Logan's the third wheel. Well, the WWE must agree with us, eh? Because she's the first person to pin Ember Moon. And they didn't do that arbitrarily. They did that because they want to push Sarah Logan. They've given her a new gimmick. And they gave her a huge win over the former NXT Women's Champion. I don't care if Liv Morgan got involved. They still gave her that victory. And they gave her that victory because they see what we saw. And that is, she's the one with the most potential. She's the one that looks like she's really fighting when she's in the ring. Ruby Riott's great. Don't get me wrong. But I always saw more potential in Sarah Logan. And I think now, apparently, Mike, the WWE do too. Because you don't repackage someone and give them a huge win on their debut repackaging over a former NXT Women's Champion who is currently undefeated in WWE. Unless you plan on pushing them.
No, I don't know what they're doing with this new gimmick. You know, I mean, basically what they're doing, what this gimmick is, it sounds like, is Ty of Valkyrie in Impact.
Yeah.
That's what this is. You know, now, I would have loved to have seen them keep going with this, but I like the match. And look, they made a point to point out that she was basically, through majority of that match, Sarah Logan was basically throwing Ember Moon around using her power, overpowering Ember Moon. Now, there was a point in the match when Ember Moon quickened the pace and used a little bit more of her, you know, athleticism. But once when she knocked her down off that top rope, you know, with that punch, that was it. She didn't have to do much. That was, in my mind, yeah, she pinned her, but that was the end of the match right there because you usually don't come back from that.
Right. Yeah, look, they're pushing her, and if they felt they needed to change her gimmick to push her, fine, but I didn't think they needed to change her gimmick. Just push her. Push her as that redneck country girl who's tough. That's fine. Because I don't think she's going to make a good Celtic Viking. Call me crazy. On the other hand, Liv Morgan's doing a great job of looking like a psychopathic Harley Quinn on the outside of the ring. She's not very good in the ring, but on the outside of the ring, her body language, her looks, her facial expressions, she's got that down. She's got the acting part of this down. Now she can work on the wrestling a little bit. We got something. So, I mean, look, we'll see what happens with Sarah Logan. But I know that Ember Moon has been in the Federation for, what, about 4 or 5 months now? And they haven't even given her one storyline, by the way. Just individual matches, but no storyline. So I don't think they think all that much of her, to be perfectly honest. Which is a shame, because I think she's really good. So let's get to the end. We get the last three-way match, which is anticlimactic, because we already know Bobby Lashley's winning this match. Elias is sure as hell not winning it. But I do want to talk about Elias before we get to it. Elias is absolutely gold, and if they do not do something really soon to capitalize on that, then they're idiots. You do not have a heel make fun of a face in a way that the fans not only appreciate, but agree with. So when Elias sings a song and says, I would rather watch paint dry than listen to Bobby Lashley talk, I laughed out loud because I'm like, that's exactly true. Bobby Lashley is horrible on the mic. And for Elias to come out and use that as a lyric to a song doesn't make me want to hate him. It makes me applaud and say, right on, man. That's exactly what I think. And that's not what you do with a heel. So I don't know why they're trying to endear him so much to the crowd and at the same time keep pushing, he's a bad guy, he's a bad guy, he's a bad guy. Apparently he's not. I also want to say that the announcing last night was horrible again. Okay? This is Sunday they were horrible, and Monday they were horrible. Coach is almost unlistenable at this point. I try to drown him out as much as possible. But Corey Graves is getting bad too now. Corey Graves says, well, I've seen Pearl Jam, and I've seen Bruno Mars in this arena, and Elias is the worst. What do you mean? That's not what you meant to say, Corey. What you meant to say is I've seen what are you saying, that Pearl Jam and Bruno Mars suck? You're the one who went to see him. You're the one who paid to see him. So what I think he was trying to say, but he couldn't articulate it, is I've seen good people in this arena, and Elias isn't good. But he blew it and made it sound like, well, I've seen really bad, but Elias is worse than the worst. No, that doesn't make any sense. The announcing was just terrible. Just terrible. They forgot things. Michael Cole had to say, oh, I stand corrected a couple of times. It's just awful. Wake up. Even they're bored with the product. They're bored with the product. That's not a good sign. So we get to the final three-way dance, and Bobby Lashley was a little bit better than he was against Roman Reigns last night or the night before last. But look, Bobby Lashley is not going to be the face of this company. Bobby Lashley is not going to be the guy who the fans all support. And as much as a lot of people are saying, well, I'd love to see Bobby Lashley be the first black, you know, heavyweight champion, I know a lot of black people are like, not Bobby. I don't want to see Bobby be that, you know. And I tend to agree with him. I don't want to see him be that either, because, listen, he's not going to put on good matches. He may be there, but he's not going to put on good matches. And then we get this weird thing with Braun Strowman, who just says, the reason I didn't want to be in the three-way dances is because I got this briefcase, and that guarantees me a shot. Okay. Well, that's dumb, because if you were in there and you won, then you not only have a shot, but then you could have a second shot. So that doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of stuff that didn't make a lot of sense last night. And then there were a few really good moments. I just think that we need to take a step back. The WWE needs to take a step back and say, what is it that we got that's good? And I'll tell you what they got that's good. They've got Elias, who's popular, and you could do something with him. You got Seth Rollins, who's super, super over, and you got to keep that ball rolling. You got Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler as heels that people are actually starting to really dislike and want to see beat. That's good. Those are three solids that you got. Now let's work off that. But you can't do it if you write inconsistent, crazy stuff that fans say, what sense does that make? You can't do it if nobody says, wait a minute, Kurt Angle can't say Baron Corbin can't be in one of the three-way matches because he lost last night, because he just let Roman Reigns be in one and he lost last night. How come we can't have that kind of consistency? How come one writer doesn't raise his hand and say, no, let's not use that line? Because that makes Kurt look like an idiot. And it's illogical. We got to have more of that. We got to have more consistency. All Kurt had to say is, I thought you were too busy being a constable to want to be pursuing a title. Maybe you better decide whether you want to be a behind-the-scenes personnel or a professional wrestler. That would have made a hell of a lot more impact. A hell of a lot more. So all in all, in the Bayley and Sasha thing, look, that moment was the very, very best moment from this the whole Bayley and Sasha thing. That was the very best and the most realistic moment. Unfortunately, that should have been the end. That should have been just before roll credits, everything's done, we saw the whole story, and this is how it ends. And I got a feeling it's not. And you don't put the end before the middle. And I think that's what they did. By the way, we have a huge lightning storm here, so if we're thrown off the air, you know why. Other than that, I'm beginning to see signs that Raw's getting better. My assumption is it's because Paul Heyman is taking the reins on some of these things and saying, let's try to corral things. You can't do it all in a week or two. There's no way to fix years of broken nonsense in a week or 2 weeks. But I am starting to see some positive things. I'm starting to see some things I can get emotionally invested in. But you got to get by. Let me tell you what you got to get by. You got to get by SummerSlam. Because the Brock Lesnar poison, that's got to go. It's got to go. And then maybe we can get back to business as usual here. But the negative news that I have to report to you is I have very good sources that tell me Brock Lesnar is scheduled for the Monday Night Raw after SummerSlam. Not sure why. Maybe to have his rematch that isn't successful. Maybe to say goodbye. Maybe to hedge your bets and say, well, we're still going to keep him under contract. Let's hope that's not the case. Or maybe he is going to walk into that ring with the Universal Championship. And if that's the case, I don't know. I don't know if I can be a Raw fan anymore. I'm done. I'm done with the whole Brock Lesnar nonsense. So, before the thunderstorm wipes us out, let's get to our ratings just in case. Mike, I'm going to tell you, just because of the good spots, just because of the Dolph Ziggler interview, just because of the great match with Bobby Roode that threw me for a loop, just because of the very heartfelt and very, very realistic feeling exchange between Bayley and Sasha Banks, which was their very best, easily their very best, I'm going to give this a B+. I think this was a better show. There were some horrible spots. There's no question. But what was good was way better than what was good was way better than bad was bad, if you know what I mean. Some of the bad was like it's bad, but you can live through it. The good showed me going forward, we may actually have some really good things. I love the way they're building up Mojo. I think he's going to be good. I absolutely loved the fact that that Dolph Ziggler won something on his own and proved he's not just going to be a Drew McIntyre, has to fight for me champion. And they were ballsy enough to say, Bobby, you got to take the loss even in a non-title match. That was ballsy. So those things are all positive. So I'm going to give it a B+.
I agree with you. I'm going to give it a little bit less. I'm going to give it a B. And look, couple of other things they got to correct, you know. You got to do something with Sarah Logan besides just simply pushing her. I mean, push her big. And two, they've started and stopped so much on Titus Worldwide. I mean, we thought they had something when they had Titus, Dana Brooke, and what's-his-face, you know. And they kind of split them up for a while, and they got the piss of get off the pot and make the deal and say, we're going to stick these guys, much like Rusev, English, and Lana, they got to piss and get off the pot and say, we're going to put these guys together and keep them together and let them run with it, you know?
Yeah, I think they basically told us last night that the Titus Worldwide thing is done. They may come out together, but they're not going to be anything more than preliminary guys to set up other people, and that's fine. You know, eventually you got to establish your pecking order, and that's why I was very big on Bobby Roode losing, because they're basically saying, look, Bobby, you're not over. You're a good wrestler. We can use you, but we can't use you on top, and that's probably the best thing for right now. It really is. It's probably the best thing. It helps further Ziggler. At some time, Ziggler will cycle down and Bobby Roode will probably cycle up. That's the way wrestling works. But right now, it's Ziggler we're worried about, not Bobby Roode. That's why I said Almas had to beat Sin Cara more convincingly, because it's not Sin Cara we're worried about right now. It's Almas. So in the chat room, Maniac saying, you know, Reigns will probably win the title, then Strowman will probably cash it in. Maybe, probably. But in the back of my mind, I'm still saying to myself, Bobby Lashley told everyone the reason the WWE brought me in is to face Brock Lesnar, and that's weird. And now he has the chance to. So maybe they've changed their mind. I can't see him letting Roman Reigns lose twice in a row to Bobby Lashley. But they might. The problem is, did you hear the fans when Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley were exchanging punches? Boo when Bobby Lashley hit Seth, and yay when Seth hit Lashley. Lashley is not over. Lashley has not convinced the fans to root for him. And he's not the guy they want on top. Seth Rollins got rid of his Intercontinental Championship so he could be pushed to a guy that's top-level contender. And to be honest, the best story you could have told would be that Seth Rollins, okay, don't pin Bobby Lashley, pin Elias. So Seth Rollins pins Elias and has to fight a Shield brother next week. And you can tell us one of two stories. Either one, that Roman Reigns gets by him and Seth is a little bitter about it, or Seth gets by him and Roman Reigns is a little bitter by it, or neither one of them's bitter. Whatever story you tell, it's still going to be better than Bobby Lashley versus Roman Reigns again. Because what will it be? Bobby Lashley wins, and then you say, Bobby Lashley is clearly better than Roman Reigns. Okay. Or, oh, Roman Reigns won. So they're kind of 50-50. They could beat each other on any given day. Okay. That's not a very good story. The story was Seth Rollins, and that was the guy they would have got emotionally invested in. Fans would have said, come on, Rollins, I hope Rollins wins. I hope Reigns don't win. But they don't want you to think that, see? They want you to say, well, you know what? Given the two people, maybe I will root for Reigns because I don't want Lashley to win. See, that's what they want you to think. They want you to have to root for Reigns in absentia because you don't want Bobby Lashley. And they knew you'd never do that. Ever with Bobby Lashley, with Seth Rollins, because everyone will be on Seth Rollins' side. But what a great story that would tell. I mean, if you really were the WWE and you wanted to give the fans what they wanted, how come you can't give them Seth Rollins ekes out a victory over Roman Reigns and Roman Reigns turns heel? How come you can't give us that? Fans would have ate it up. You know, it's almost like it's my playhouse and I say who wins and I don't care what the fans say. And I just think that's an awful, awful thing to do. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I got to go with a B+.
I enjoyed the show. Not all of it, but most of it. And I'll tell you something. The Sasha Banks Bailey thing surprised me. Because when I heard Sasha Banks say what she said, my jaw dropped a little bit, and I'm like, whoa. All of a sudden, I'm like, wait, this turned very serious, and I now care about it. I didn't care about it before. So you caught my attention. I just think it was in the wrong spot. If this had been the end, I would have been like, what a great ending. Wouldn't that have been a great ending? We hate each other, and Kurt Angle finally says, you know what, then? You guys were such good friends, I didn't want you to fight. I didn't want to have to do this. But if this is the way you're going to act, then fight. Fight it out. Go ahead and fight it out. And Sasha saying, good, I can't wait to tear her apart. And Bayley saying, good, because I'm going to get back revenge for everything she's ever done to me. And these two girls have such a great match. Such a great match. They can't but begrudgingly say, I respect the other one. And I would have let Bayley win. And Sasha say, I'm going to SmackDown. And Bayley maybe confront her and say, I don't want you to leave because I won. And then if Sasha turned around and said the exact same thing, I never hated you, Bayley. Just the opposite. And did her whole speech and said, but this is the best for my career. What a great ending. What a great ending to a story of two friends who lost their way and kind of found it and now they're going their separate ways to, you know, further their career. What a great ending that would have been. And the WWE can't even pull that off, Mike.
They can't even pull that off. And frankly, look, we know they can put on a great match. We saw that in NXT. You know, that's the type of match that should have ended this feud. You know, after all that's said and done, then you put on that match – Then you put on, you have some very mean looking things go on in that match, but you put on that match almost to the quality of that match, and then you have them hug it out after the match, you know?
Absolutely. Then the fans would have got the full benefit of that moment, that emotional moment, you know? That's a heartfelt moment where the girl who lost has to swallow her pride, admit that Bailey beat her, and still say, irregardless, I never hated you. Irregardless, you're still my friend. This whole thing wasn't about me hating you. I never hated you. That would have been a great ending. And both girls look like $1 million, and you say, boy, those are real friends. They fought, but you know what? They were always there for each other. No, we don't get that. I don't know where that's going. All I know, that was a good moment. A misplaced one, but a good one. So, look, Raw wasn't perfect, but it's getting better. Because now I'm looking at Raw, and the following things come to my mind. I want to see what they're going to do with Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. I'm interested. You've got me interested in both characters. Because I've always thought Dolph Ziggler was a great wrestler, and he still is. And Drew McIntyre is a very, very good wrestler who's a very interesting character. So I'm interested in him. You've got me curious about Mojo Rawley. I'm beginning to really like Mojo as an old school heel. I really am. And I'm thinking to myself, I'd like to see this guy rise to the upper mid card here and see what he can do. You got me interested in Seth Rollins and what's going to happen with Rollins. If he's out of the title picture, where does he go? Something's got to happen with Rollins because he's one of the most popular guys there. And you got me interested in Elias. So you've got me interested in these people. So you've done your job there. Now let's put them in situations that compel me to say, I can't wait to turn the TV on. And then you'll have completed the cycle. Now tonight on SmackDown, I just got a little piece of news on SmackDown, which annoys me. And that is that Shinsuke Nakamura and Jeff Hardy are going to have their rematch, which means that Jeff Hardy is not injured, which means that that match wasn't out of necessity. Jeff Hardy didn't have to say backstage, I can't go. So can we do something where he attacks me before the bell, gives me a low blow in the knee, and I can just get out of here because I'm in agony? No. Apparently, they're going to have their match tonight, which means that they just decided arbitrarily, no, we don't want you to have a match. No, the fans don't deserve to see a decent match tonight. And that bothers me because that's a main event type thing. That's a pay-per-view. We don't have pay-per-views anymore, really, but that's a pay-per-view technically. That's a special show. And we're going to get a better match on SmackDown than we get on a special show. Why? That angers me a little bit. I was fully expecting Jeff Hardy is hurt. You won't see him for a while. Shinsuke Nakamura did it. Get the heat on him. Or Randy Orton did it and get the heat on him. But no. They're going to have their match tonight, Mike, so all is well. Makes no sense to me, Mike. I don't know why. Let me get you back here. We're having trouble with the phone. Hang on. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
I don't get it, you know. I mean, obviously it's the WWE is at it again. I mean, I don't blame the two guys, you know. They're only doing what they're told to do. If Jeff Hardy's told to do this, you know, if he wants to keep his job, he better, you know, he better do it. So, I mean, obviously it's a writing thing here, and it's a poor writing thing. Now, my question is and it's the same question I asked earlier. We know that Paul Heyman's writing for Raw. Might he also, at some point, write a little bit for SmackDown?
You know, I doubt it because he's just barely writing for Raw. He's like one of three or four or five, so I don't know if they'll inject any of his ideas. Maniac in the chat room says, we're still technically paying for the pay-per-view. It's just included in the network subscription. Yeah, but it's different. Here's why. When you had to go and shell out the $60, they had to make you want to do it. You had to actively say, oh, I can't miss this pay-per-view. I'm going to shell out my money. If you already subscribe to the network, they don't care if you watch it. Why do they care? They got your $10 if you never, ever turn on the network. So they don't care. As long as you don't